Welcome to Book It, a bi-weekly podcast where we talk frankly about books.
My name is Jill.
And my name is Michael.
Catch us every other Wednesday talking about books, publishing, indie bookstores, chatting with authors, and so much more.
Follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Book It Pod for more Book It content.
Want to read something you heard about on today's episode? Visit us at bookshop.org/shop/BookItPod. Okay, good things first.
Yes.
Michael and I are sitting in the same room together.
I am seeing Jill in three dimensions.
We're vaxxed. We're not relaxed. I was going to say we're vaxxed and relaxed, but we are not relaxed.
Very far from it.
This was the most stressful 90 minutes.
Of possibly my life?
Yeah.
At least the year, which is saying a lot.
It really is, but I was sweating and had to turn our AC down to 68.
Which is already like speaking my love language because my house is always at 68 anyway, so I appreciate it. But hi!
Hi!
Your eyebrows look amazing.
Thank you. I had them microbladed and I sort of love it.
I love them.
Yeah.
I love seeing you right now.
I was really looking forward to this.
Yeah.
And I thought I had this great plan. I was like, great, I have this mic stand. I'm going to like screw my microphone into it. Everything's going to be good. And then none of the parts were the same or right size. I don't know.
That's you not knowing is still more than I know.
It was wild. And then Mark brought down a cymbal stand. It's also not the right size. In the end, we rearranged all the furniture in my living room and drug my desk in here from the office, which is not light or small.
Correct.
And then we had mic problems.
Yeah, which is wild.
Yeah, because I feel like that has not happened in a very long time.
Since the beginning. But we're good. We're here.
Now we're together.
We're together. This has been a learning experience.
Yes.
I didn't know I had anything left to learn about podcasting.
I mean, I'm sure there's lots to learn, but man, I feel like we learned a lot right now.
Yes.
And I don't know that I was ready for that to be what happened today.
Me neither. And I think it was like just a great reminder to like just don't think too highly of yourself for too long because something in life is going to bring you right back down to where you should be.
I did like that at the height of the chaos, Mark was like, I think we can let the babysitter go home. And I was like,
there was a lot of perspective. Like, we were freaking out about this. Your daughter desperately needed her phone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The tween needed her cell phone. One of the kids got home from camp. There was a lot happening.
Oh, speaking of which,
was here.
The kid who came home from camp is Quentin.
Yeah.
He came in and took one look at me and he was like, oh, it's happening in here? I was like, hey, buddy, do you remember me?
That's very on brand for him.
I love it.
Yeah.
Okay. And he walked out.
We survived.
Yes.
Somehow.
Yes.
And I am actually really excited about our topic today.
Me too. This was completely Jill's idea. And I've been looking forward to this conversation for weeks because I hadn't even thought about this as a subgenre for books.
It was one of those things where as soon as it popped into my brain, it was like, we must do this.
Right.
And there's just something special about books about books.
Yes.
First of all, I think we both started from this place of like, are there enough books to do this episode?
I had what you said about debut novels where you were like, I haven't read a single debut novel. When you said this, I was like, this is a great idea, but I've never read a book about a book. And then I did some research and I was like, you're an idiot. You've read enough to talk about.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There are so many, and I was surprised I had read a bunch of them.
Yeah.
So I definitely think, in addition to on our bookshop, we always list the books we talk about. But I feel like we should make a whole reading list.
Totally agree.
Yeah. Books about books and publishing and libraries and bookstores.
Because if you think about it, like, and I don't think we'll talk about these today, but even in quarantine, I read, like, one of the books I talked about at length in 2020. 20 was because it brought me so much joy, and I know it brought Jill joy, was How to Find Love in a Bookshop.
Yes.
Why didn't that immediately come to my mind?
That's actually not one that I even wrote down to talk about today. There were so many.
Yeah, exactly. It's my point. It's like, I'm a idiot. Sorry, there are children here, so I have to. I can't do my usual expletives.
We might have an expletive-free episode.
Oh, gosh. Okay, I'll try.
Wouldn't that be amazing?
It would be amazing.
But also, these children have heard
expletives. We'll figure it out. Yeah.
Yeah.
What are your initial thoughts about books? Is it something that you like? Is it something that kind of like takes you out of it because you're reading a book? Because when I think about, like, I don't love movies about actors or like characters who are about actors or characters who are actors. I don't think I do. But then when I watch those movies that are about them, I don't think about it. I escape into this fake world enough to believe, if it's good, that this person or this character is an actor in that universe.
Yeah.
But what are your feelings about books?
I love books about books.
Yeah.
They just like feel warm and cozy to me. And I love seeing like what they get right about the industry and what is just like completely off the mark crazy. So that is always really interesting to me.
Yeah.
You have triggered my mind though. I started immediately trying to think of like movies about actors and like
right.
Have you watched that? Oh, I think it might be on Netflix with Matt LeBlanc, where...
Oh, episodes?
Yes.
It's very... what's the word? It's pretty tongue-in-cheek. Like, it knows what it is. It's fourth wall breaking.
Yes. Yeah. I love that aspect of these kinds of books.
Yeah. Okay.
Books about books have that kind of behind the scenes vibe for me.
Yes.
Yeah. And I really love it. But I have to ask you, like, so when you get that behind the scenes or breaking the fourth wall, are there things about books, like stereotypes of publishing or authors that like drive you crazy or you love to see? What rings true and what makes you just go bonkers?
Oh, that's a good question. I think it totally depends on my state of mind and what I'm looking for, because sometimes How to Find Love in a Bookshop style storytelling would maybe annoy me because I know that that's not how it is in the indie bookstore world and the publishing world. But when I'm looking for something that's very cozy and I just want to be surrounded by an author who clearly loves books because she decided to write a book about a bookshop, I love. I think the thing that would maybe be most annoying to me is how streamlined and easy it is to be like a published author.
Yes.
Because it's the hardest thing I've ever tried to do in my life.
Yes.
Yeah.
I agree about that. As we know, I'm obsessed with Hallmark Christmas movies.
Yes.
For a while there, Hallmark was on a run. I think they must have said, like, send us Christmas movies that involve bookstores and or librarians.
Sure.
Or authors. And it was so funny to me because, of course, everything about a Hallmark movie is ridiculous. But, like, the authors would be like, I came from my Manhattan high rise.
Exactly.
Back to my small town. And I'm like, no, authors make no money.
And they live everywhere. Like, most authors don't live in Manhattan. They live in the Midwest because it's cheap, so they can write a book.
Yes. And it's like, I own a bookstore, and I live in the biggest house in town. Right. You're like, no.
Firsthand know that no. simply can't be true.
Exactly. I feel like the only reason I can work in a bookstore is because I'm married to a spouse who does not.
Well, and also, like, I think that's why You've Got Mail doesn't bother me, because it's... I mean, it's sad to say, it's about a failed independent bookstore in a really busy city. And that sucks, but it feels very true. Mm. And in it, even, like, the only reason she's able to own that bookstore is because it's a legacy. Her mother owned it.
Yeah.
And she's also beloved in the publishing world in New York, which is the publishing capital of America, is why, like, that is a great, I think, I know that's a movie, but in fiction... because that's a fictional movie, it straddled that line really well of, like, okay, this is obviously really sincere and sentimental, and kind of hokey, but it was in the 90s, while also being pretty realistic. Like, it didn't work out. She had to close her bookstore.
Yeah, yeah. And it's definitely showed where the market has ended up, yes. where, you know, it's about volumes and discount more
than the experience.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And I do think another thing I love about that movie is it shows, you know, the staff of her store are friends.
Yes.
And they genuinely like each other. Right. And they're involved in one another's lives.
Yes.
And I do feel like that is very much how our staff was when we all worked together.
Oh, absolutely. And I think...
Well, it's how we're friends.
Yeah. That's how
now
I
that
was...
we're actually
exactly.
Friends.
That's how I was friends with you.
Yes.
And then you realized that a year later.
It's never going to get old.
No. And that is my experience in independent bookstores and in publishing. And that felt so natural. And I do think that that's what books like How to Find Love in a Bookshop do really well, is that community aspect, the friendship aspect of being around books and in books. But it's few and far between. And I think that I'm excited to talk about the books we have today, because just on top of the idea of this subgenre, the way that books can be in worlds of books that I didn't realize, like, oh, I guess, yeah, this is a book about books. But when I was reading it, I didn't clock that until we started discussing this.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's really true.
Yeah.
Why don't we start with some that we've both read?
Perfect.
We've talked a little bit, I think when we talked about adaptations, we just kind of skirted around, I'm going to butcher the title every time, the Guernsey Literary and Potato Peel Society, which is older, but I really like that one because it's a novel that's told about books and about book lovers, and it evokes a period of time when, you know, during World War II, when books were the entertainment and books were not available in abundance. And so this idea that a group of people would gather together, even for a fake book club, is really moving. And the book is so well done. And I really connected with that one.
So I have not read that book.
We talked about this book, right?
No, I mean, sort of. We talked about, I've seen the adaptation, but I have never read the book.
Did we just talk about how we'd seen the movie?
Now it's coming back to me a little bit. Now I remember talking about maybe something to do with the place I used to work, which was the independent book publisher.
Yeah.
You like came up and you didn't know it was a book or a movie?
Yes, I watched the movie and I really enjoyed it. And I was talking at work about how I liked it. And someone, maybe you, said, you know, it's a book.
I think
and
it was Amy told you
oh,
that.
It was Amy. She said, oh, it's a book. I really liked the book. And I was like, it's a book.
So you didn't know it was a book and I haven't read the book. This is our book podcast. Subscribe. Never miss an episode.
We are so professional. This just goes with our theme for today. Yeah. Cool. Okay, so maybe this will be in the episode and maybe we'll cut this whole thing.
But I do really want to read it. And I like hearing what you're saying about it. Like the idea of these people, despite their realities, still coming together, whether it's true or not, that to read books and that book community existing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That is what I enjoy about the book that you have.
I'm glad I could repeat back to you what you felt about it.
Exactly. Okay. I do have one that I know for a fact that you read because you suggested it to me.
Yeah.
And that's Less by Andrew Greer.
Yeah. This is one of my favorite books of all time.
For anybody who hasn't read it, I don't know who that might be other than me, because it won a Pulitzer. Just like briefly, I love the synopsis that the publisher has written for it. It says, problem. You are a failed novelist about to turn 50. A wedding invitation arrives in the mail. Your boyfriend of the past 9 years engaged to someone else. You can't say yes. It would all be too awkward. And you can't say no. It would look like defeat. On your desk are a series of half-baked literary invitations you've received from around the world. How do you arrange to skip town? You accept them all. And I know we both loved this book.
This is probably my most recommended book of all time.
Yeah. I love this book. Yeah. I could easily and frequently recommend it.
Yeah,
what are your favorite things about it?
I love how it's written. I think it's so clever.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't love this about it, but I love that it won the Pulitzer after having read it, because that's such a weighty honor.
Mm-hmm.
And I like that a book that is optimistic, lighthearted, but not unreal.
Yeah.
Won. And a book written by a gay person wins a huge award and is in now the hands of so many more people because of that award. I loved that. I loved the perspective of a gay man in middle age. And it's explored in the book. And Andrew Sean Greer did tweet me back something once that I wrote.
I like that you're already playing with your hair.
Yeah. No big deal.
As you mention the name drop and the...
His reply.
The tweet reply. Please tell us about it, because you'll want to.
Well, it's just in the book... A theme in the book is that gay men of a certain age don't really know how to navigate middle age, because so many of them died due to the AIDS epidemic. And I had, as a gay person, it made me reflect on the queer people who came before me and everything that they went through. For me to be able to be living openly and married now, and it did what I think is really difficult, which takes important messages and themes and makes it, I don't want to say easy to read, but it sneaks up on you in otherwise really clever writing, and then you realize my breath was taken away, and I really value that lesson I learned from it, and is just one of the best books and one of the best endings I've ever read.
I did not realize it was I was blinded by my own privilege, because when you first mentioned that to me, I hadn't even thought about it.
Mm.
And my take on it was that it was so cleverly reflecting on just aging in general.
Sure.
And when you said that, I was like, oh God, yes, it's about that, but that's not what it's really about. And, you know, so then I like went back and like read parts of it, and I was like, oh yeah. And I was so glad that we had the opportunity to talk about that, because I didn't see my own blind spot about it. And you and I have had some follow-up conversations about it that I thought were really interesting and good. I think at one point in the book, Les says, like, is this what we march for, so that people can get married and sit on the couch for the rest of their lives or something?
Right.
And he's kind of incredulous about it at first. I really liked that aspect of it as well. And when you talk about the writing
–
this is the weirdest thing to have noticed, but this book has less speaks in like metaphors and similes.
Mm-hmm.
And I love that, because I feel like what could be really long exposition of describing a character or moving through several points of action to get a greater feel for something, Les just like notices these mundane things in life and makes a metaphor or a simile out of something as a joke.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden you have this like perfect understanding of the person he's describing or the situation in so few words. And it's just, I don't know, I feel like, I don't know how to describe it, but I just really loved that approach. It feels really witty.
Yes, so witty.
Mm-hmm. And fresh. And I mean, the book is not very long, but it tackles a lot of really interesting, and there's a lot of deep takes in a book so short.
Yes. And I think I love what you're saying about that, because it would be easy to sort of dismiss something like that as, you know, similes and metaphors as kind of being like, just like beating your head over it, you know, like it's like an English lesson because you learn about similes and metaphors, but it's not like that.
Yeah, because I, you know, I almost, please don't send me hate mail. It's like almost to the point now where like, I don't ever want to talk about The Great Gatsby ever again, because right. if I have to talk about symbols one more time, yes. like I can't take it.
Exactly.
But this is not like that.
Exactly. And I totally agree with you. And because you don't realize it's happening either. Like, he's not trying to teach you a lesson or some, or anything like that. You just are, or you just are learning. And I just loved it so much. And he is such a delight on social media.
Yes.
He's interacted with us on Book It. I'm just going to assume he's a fan and listens to this. And one of our authors in season two, Jessica Strasser, also, because we talked about it, started reading it and reached out to him, and he responded to her. So we're bringing people together on this podcast.
I tagged him on social media today.
Oh, no way.
Yes, because I posted a little sneak peek of the books we were going to talk about
and
in our stories. I don't know. I haven't been back on.
We're going to check.
You tell me. We need the Jeopardy music.
Okay, nothing yet, but he will. Okay. Because he did last time. He gave us a smiley face.
Stay tuned. Yeah.
By the end of this, maybe he will have.
Okay, I have a question for you.
Yeah.
Because I felt like the stupidest person on earth. Did you know who the narrator was? And if so, at what point? Because I spent the vast majority of the book. I feel like I caught on 2 seconds before we found out. Oh. The vast majority of the book, I thought that Les was dead and someone was like telling the story at his wake or something.
I didn't go that dark.
Look, it has a medal on the front.
Yes, so. Exactly. I didn't guess who it was. No. And I like that it's, by the end, clear who it is, but never so overt. Again, it's so subtle. Like, everything in this book is so subtle. And I don't even want to, like, talk too much about the end, because I just got chills thinking about the experience reading the end. It's a book that makes you fall in love with reading again. And who is telling the story is a part of that, you know? Like, it plays with your concept of what a book can be and what it means to be an unreliable narrator.
Yes, I feel like one of the nice things about, I did not have the narrator figured out until probably, I'm going to say, 4 paragraphs before it was revealed.
Yeah.
One of the things I really loved about it was that once it is revealed, it's just like the whole, you root for Les the whole time.
The whole time.
But it just kind of just wraps the whole situation in love, if that makes any sense whatsoever.
Jill, that makes only makes sense.
Okay.
Yes, exactly. Like, it's such a warm, touching book, but it doesn't shy away from really important topics, but it never loses sight of its own tone.
Yes. Yeah, it's like sneaky.
Sneaky little book.
Yes, yes, I agree. Did you bring any that you love?
Yes.
Hit me with it.
Okay, so this one, it came to my mind immediately once I started thinking about this episode. It's called Erasure by Percival Everett. I read it in college for a class, and it has stayed with me ever since. It is one of the most unique books I've ever read. It's about a writer named Thelonious Monk Ellison, and his career has kind of stalled, but his personal life is kind of falling apart. And despite his most recent work being critically acclaimed, his manuscripts are being rejected. And while this is happening, he watches this book from a debut author come out called Wiz Lives in the Ghetto, and it skyrockets and is an immediate success, acclaimed bestseller. And the writer wrote it, was someone who wrote it because she, quote, visited some relatives in Harlem for a couple of days. So he's furious.
Yeah.
And in his fury, he writes this novel called My Pathology. It's supposed to be an indictment of this other author's bestseller. And he never intends for it to be published. Lo and behold, it's published under his pseudonym Stagger Lee. It is wildly successful and is easily his most successful book he's ever written. And it leads to an inevitable end that I won't reveal. But it gets so out of hand that he is doing interviews as Stag R. Lee, putting on a voice, like this whole new person. What I love about this book is that in this book, Erasure, halfway through it, is the book that he wrote. And it's like 60 pages of my pathology. So we get to read Erasure and the book the character wrote, and then that book becoming a wild success that gets wildly out of hand because he writes it in response to somebody else's work that he disagrees with. It is unreal, deeply satirical, one of my favorite books of all time.
I am dying to read this book.
And look at this. This is not that big. For there to be a book in here that is another book.
Another book?
It's unreal. It's an unbelievable experience reading this book.
That's wild.
Yeah.
I love the idea that, like, his pseudonym becomes, like, a whole other person.
Yes. And it's a lot about it's a Black author, and the character is a Black man. And his book, his manuscripts are being rejected because it's, quote-unquote, like, the wrong Black experience. And that is clearly really frustrating to him because he feels like he has to play into a stereotype to be successful, and he does accidentally.
Yeah.
And trying to sort of navigate regaining claim and ownership over self and creativity, it's an amazing book.
I'm putting this on my TBR.
You've got to.
Oh,
I tell as many people as I can about it. But I will say, it's not a book I recommend all of the time because I don't love satire.
Yeah.
But I love this book, and I love this kind of satire. It's really clever.
I love that. Yeah. And I love when a book is – we've kind of talked around this a little bit. It's like you like books almost despite yourself. You're like, I don't like this kind of book.
Yes.
And then you end up loving a book like that.
Exactly. Which is why, like, I try not to read too habitually. Like, I want to read as many different kinds of books as I can. Satire is the one that I almost never read. And then every once in a while, like, you hit a home run with an amazing book. So I need to your point, yes, I need to, like, explore that a little bit more.
I love that.
Yeah. What about you?
I want to talk about a book that I've already talked about a little bit on a previous episode. Just because when we did What Are You Reading Now, it was like I had finished it the night before.
Mm.
And now I've, like, percolated on it since I read it, and it's still in my mind. It's called Palace of the Drowned by Christine Mangan, and it comes out in June. She wrote Tangerine.
Oh, okay.
And I didn't put together – I might have said that already. I didn't put together that even though it is written literally
right
on the cover – yeah, I didn't put it together.
I haven't read Tangerine.
I also love Tangerine.
Okay.
So when we talked about this book the last time, I had mentioned to you that it's marketed as a thriller, and I don't like thrillers.
I'm remembering this now.
But I loved this book. And then I noticed as the reviews have started to come out about it, because I think the book comes out next week from when we're recording this, somebody called it a literary thriller.
Oh, sign me up.
Right? I was like, that needs to be like a whole genre. Yeah. I will read literary thriller every day of my life. I love it. But so just briefly, the main character is Frankie. And she is a successful author, and then her debut is very popular. Her follow-up books, not as much so.
Oh, the fear of all writers, I think.
And she gets really stung by a negative review, and she just snaps. And she is at a society event where the reviewer is there, and she causes a scene and all that, and she ends up spending some time in a mental health facility. And then she comes out, and her good friend says, why don't you go to my family's home in Venice and just rest and recuperate? So she heads off there. It's set in the 1960s. And so it's like, how do you, you know, today you could never like lay low and escape to another country to get away from your big scandal.
Right.
But she gets there and this young woman, Jillie, who is kind of a fan slash stalker.
Oh.
Seeks her out and befriends her. And she keeps thinking at various points, like something's off about her, but she never really puts it all together. And what I like about it is that each successive chapter, it's not like a puzzle where you're putting together what happens in the thriller. It's almost like those, is it a kaleidoscope where you like look in the eye hole and as you turn it, the shapes change?
Yeah.
Is that a kaleidoscope?
Yeah.
It's like a kaleidoscope. And each chapter gives you a different perspective and additional information, but you're still really not sure what's going on. In the end, Jillie's dead. That's not a spoiler. It's on the cover. But you don't know what happens.
Wow.
And the question is, like, what went on?
Yeah.
Was it an accident? Was she a crazed stalker fan? Was she always a kind person? Was she an aspiring writer who befriended a writer she admired and things went wrong? Did Frankie imagine the whole thing? And did she ever write her fifth novel that's an ongoing plot point throughout the whole book? It's incredibly engrossing. And even now, I'm still turning it over in my head. I need someone to read this so that I can talk to them. Because what happened? I don't know.
I love books that I can't stop thinking about in this way.
Mm-hmm.
And I love hearing that it's not like a big gotcha reveal moment.
No.
Because those tend to, for me, feel a little bit like shock value.
Mm-hmm.
This sounds so literary, and I am dying to take it home with me tonight.
Yes. Oh, you should.
Okay, great.
We'll have to update listeners later because I can't decide. I just can't decide what I think happened.
This is amazing. I've never heard someone, after they read a book, tell me like, I still don't know.
Well, because it's purposefully left open.
I love that.
Yeah. And I think there are so many plausible explanations.
Possibilities. Absolutely.
And I love kind of turning them over. And it's just gripping in a really good way. And it's not left open in a way where you're like, they didn't resolve it and it's annoying.
Right.
It's open in the way that so many things are where you're like, what happened here?
Wow. And okay, so as someone who would not normally pick up thriller, talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, I don't enjoy violence.
Same.
Or like gore or anything like that. I don't want to read about, I don't know.
I
don't want to read about violence. I feel like a lot of thrillers, especially, involve either serial killers or sexual violence.
Yeah.
And I very much, I'm good.
Yeah.
I don't want to read that. And I think we talked about in the very first episode of the podcast, as a child, I was not allowed to watch Little House on the Prairie.
Yes.
Because every time I saw an episode, I cried. I'm just not tough enough to do it.
Oh.
And so in my mind, like that's what thriller means.
Well, yeah, I think that's totally understandable.
And somehow you put the word literary in front of it.
Wait a minute.
Yeah. And I would say, you know that Jillie's not going to make it to the end of the book. And so it's not like, I don't know, it's almost like watching an episode of Law and Order where you just know the person's dead up front, so it's not scary.
No, that makes a lot of sense to me.
Okay.
Yeah. This sounds like a book Josh would love to read, so I'm definitely bringing it home for him as well. Thank you for sharing this one.
What do you have?
I have another one, and it's funny that you mentioned The Great Gatsby.
Yeah.
Because my second book is called...
Which is also about books.
Which is also about books. Fuck that book. We get it.
We're definitely going to get hate mail.
But this book is called Z, a novel of Zelda Fitzgerald by, I think it's Therese Ann Fowler.
Yeah.
And it's a fiction book. It's not nonfiction about Zelda Fitzgerald married to F. Scott Fitzgerald, but it is a fictional retelling of her real life.
Oh, I've heard of this book.
It's one of my all-time favorite books.
I haven't read it. You would enjoyed it.
Oh, you would love this book. My mom recommended it to me years ago. We don't always read the same books, but it's always fun recommending books to one another because it's like, because we know we're not super similar readers, but when I read a book that I'm like, she would love this.
Oh, yeah.
It's so fun because I know very well that she will, and she knew I would love this, and I did. And it's really just it's kind of a book about nothing other than it goes from Zelda's life from right before she meets F. Scott Fitzgerald up until the end of their relationship, which is, I believe it's his death, and the different ways that they inspired each other, that era of writers, and how she was a writer in her own right, and he prevented her from publishing her work. And I think she ultimately did under a male pseudonym. But it's not celebrated. I mean, like, we don't talk about Zelda Fitzgerald. And I think it just gives her the credit she is due. I want to stress, like, it is fiction. But I think that a lot of it clearly comes from the experiences that we know that Zelda Fitzgerald had. Mm-hmm. The things that she went through in her life, in and out of hospitals. Traipsing through the world just because F. Scott Fitzgerald wanted to and was a somewhat successful writer. Was really interesting. I had never read or honestly considered Zelda's perspective.
Yeah.
Because we only ever talk about F. Scott Fitzgerald. I think Amazon Prime tried to do an adaptation. I don't think it went very far, but I couldn't recommend the book more.
That's really interesting to me. And one of the things I love about fictionalized, like based on a true story,
yes,
is that it always inspires me to like read more about it. Like, I feel like every time we watch a season of The Crown, I'm always like, hold on, pause. And I'm like pulling up my computer and I'm like reading about what happened or putting a book, you know, on my pile of things that I want to read about because I want to know more about it.
Yes, totally agree.
Definitely seems like a book that inspires further reading.
Yes. I just ended up having a lot of respect for Zelda Fitzgerald, the fictional Zelda or the real one, you know, because I think that there's a lot of truth here in it and kind of an era that we never talk about it outside of the books that these people wrote. We don't take a look at the people living the actual lives.
Yeah. I mean, I think we've so romanticized Hemingway and Fitzgerald and I don't know how to say what I'm thinking, but it's more like it's almost become a legend, almost.
And untouchable. You're
like, but there had to be – these things didn't happen in a vacuum, I guess, is what I'm saying.
Exactly. And I think that we talk about like J.R.R. Tolkien and C.S. Lewis in the same way, mm-hmm. but the feelings I have about those two things are very different for some reason. Like when I think about F. Scott Fitzgerald and Hemingway – while I don't hate their work, I have like really gross feelings about them.
Yeah.
And when I think about C.S. Lewis and J.R.R. Tolkien and Lloyd Alexander, I feel really warm thoughts about them helping each other become writers. And they maybe because they were just like lovelier people. But in all of this, we're not talking about women. Like the women still exist. And Zelda Fitzgerald was one of them who was a creative in her own right. And I think that's part of what I loved about Z.
Oh, I feel like I need to read this
now. I think you would love it.
I love it.
TBR pile getting bigger and bigger. A friend of mine told me recently that she returns to our TBR pile episode all the time because it's just bananas.
I love that we did an entire episode in which I doubled down on like,
yes,
TBR is ridiculous. And in the time that has elapsed since then, I have like completely changed my approach to doing things.
And that will be, it's out now, revealed, episode before. Jill eats her words. Do you have another book for me?
Not so much like a whole book that I wanted to talk about, but I was thinking as we talk about writers, and this one's a little bit of a stretch, and I'm still rolling around our conversation about Little Fires Everywhere.
Right.
In my mind. because I loved your perspective. And we were talking about, you know, the characters being problematic, which is 1,000% true. But there is something about the book that keeps a hold of me. And it's kind of this idea of like, haven't you ever taken something too far? And Elena, you know, she starts doing a little bit of research and it's like a rabbit hole.
Yes.
And she can't let it go. And that aspect of the book, and I think it comes from her writing a reporter background of just, I'm going to solve this even if it blows up. She just doesn't even see it.
Yeah, like, she has the tunnel vision.
Yeah, the solving of this is going to blow up my entire life.
And I don't have room to care about that.
Yeah, but it's like a compulsion that you can't walk away from. And I think not to the extent that it happens in this book, but so often I feel like we end up in those kind of conflicts in life.
Yeah.
That piece of it was so relatable to me. And I just really I loved all the things that you had to say about it. And I so appreciated kind of my eyes being opened about things in it that were a problem that I didn't see. And then I was like, gosh, I really thought I liked this book, but maybe I don't. And I, you know, kind of kept replaying it. And our episode has come out now and I listened to it. And I was like, you know what? There are big swaths of this that are problematic. And that is absolutely true. And it's also true that this thread that runs through it of this just not being able to let something go and taking something too far because it's your family that continues to speak to me. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, I cannot resolve my feelings about it.
Well, but I also think that like that's art. Like,
yeah,
you don't have to love it or hate it, you know? We like that, but that's how everything is now. Like we can't fall somewhere in the middle anymore. And but the middle is where I find my best conversations.
Yeah.
And I love that you continue to explore your feelings about it. And I think you're so right. This idea, this compulsion to see something to the end, no matter what that means for everybody else. Mm-hmm. And that rabbit hole feeling is timeless. I mean, we've all been there.
And just not being able to see it.
At all. No matter what other people are telling you.
Yes. You're like, no, everyone else is imagining it.
Yes. Like that was very true in the book. And I think it would be easy for Elena to use her journalistic background as an excuse for it, which is really interesting to me because I think it's a combination of like her journalism and her writing, but also her inability to see the invisible actual reason she's doing it.
Yeah.
Which is really compelling. I mean, that is a really thoughtful part of the book that is good.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just one of those things that's interesting to me. I mean, I've now read that book 7 months ago, and we discussed it probably four, probably. It's just interesting what sticks with me. So it's not necessarily a book about books, but I did want to, you know, kind of tangentially loop it into our conversation just because I wanted to talk to you about it more. Oh,
tangentially, what a good word. Word of the day.
Yes. I'm working on my SAT words. Do you have any more books?
I have one more book and I just finished it.
I'm so excited.
So my last book is called The Midnight Library by Matt Haig.
I ordered this book and then forgot to go get it at the bookstore.
Well, I did it for you then. Okay, so I loved this book for a lot of reasons. It's about a young woman named Nora who has decided she doesn't want to live anymore. And that comes after several just like bad things happening to her where she decides like there is no reason for me to be alive anymore. And she tries to kill herself and then is transported to what is called the Midnight Library, which is like basically, for lack of a better word, the in-between. And in the Midnight Library is her childhood librarian who tells her all of the books in this midnight library are other lives you could have lived, and you can go explore those.
Oh.
And all the while, there's a book called The Book of Regrets that kind of helps her decide which lives she wants to explore, but it also lets her realize, like, regret is also just kind of perspective sometimes.
Yeah.
Because I don't think this is a spoiler. One of the bad things that happens at the beginning is her cat has died, and it appears that it was hit by a car.
Mm-hmm.
So she goes to another life where her cat is alive and well. And almost immediately in that life, she finds her cat dead under the bed. And so her perspective has shifted. First, she's annoyed. She's like, I wanted to go to a world where my cat was alive.
Yeah.
And she's like, the librarian makes her realize her cat was sick and was going to die. And she wasn't a bad cat owner. So that regret evaporates from the Book of Regrets because her perspective on person has changed. So then she starts exploring all these different lives, and it's like she keeps choosing these ones where she's been like wildly successful and like she was going to be a swimmer. Okay, a swimmer, a rock star, The guy she decides not to marry. Okay, I'm going to marry him in this life. All the while, it isn't a surprise that clearly she wants to live.
Yeah.
That isn't a surprise ever. And I don't say that as like a criticism because I think maybe he wants it to be, but it's actually kind of lovely that the whole time I know, like, this person's going to want to choose to live. I think what is so special about this book is that it takes a really intense, touchy, and delicate subject and makes it so readable and not very heavy. Because I think about the people who really need this book.
Yeah.
And it could have gone in the other way. Like, people who tend to – authors who explore suicide, I think – tend to go really dark.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it does a lot more harm than good. And this is such a, and not light isn't the right word, but it is a hopeful book about life. And I like that it is around this thing that has brought her joy in her childhood, which is books and a library.
Yeah.
Because for people who are in the Midnight Library, it's not a library for everybody. It's like whatever meant something to you as a child or something. But for her, it was the library. And I really loved it. Our book club read it. Yeah, I just liked the tone, the setting, and the writing was really clever.
I when you were first talking, I was imagining like a written book or a list of like every regret, you know, in my life. And it was horrifying and terrifying. I like this idea of perspective. Yes. And I don't know, like acceptance and growth that could come out of re-examining.
Yes.
That.
Exactly. Because we don't get that opportunity. And so when you're presented with the opportunity in fiction, you start to think about your regrets. Mm-hmm. And then you give yourself perspective. I mean, I transferred schools really early in college and I don't regret it, but occasionally I wonder like, would I have been happy if I just given it a second?
Yeah.
And I think about that frequently. And after I read this book, I was like, you wouldn't have changed your mind. And the life you have now is because you did that. Like I would not have met my husband. My friends are so important to me, and I met all my closest friends I have are from college. And so to your point, yeah, like I also was like, oh, I don't want to think about regrets. Thank you very much, the Midnight Library. Right. But then I was like, oh no, like that's just part of life. And sometimes you regret things, but other times you just need the perspective to realize you wouldn't change a thing.
Yeah. This is like 180 degrees, but I'm gonna loop it in.
Love it.
Have you read Because of Winn-Dixie?
No, and I'm really afraid.
Oh, you should.
I love dogs.
I know it has a medal on the cover, and so you're like, the dog dies, right?
Yeah, exactly.
It does not.
Oh, I'm gonna read it tomorrow.
Yeah, no, it's really funny because when I would recommend it to parents, either at the library or at the bookstore, I would be like, okay, look, I know it has a medal on the cover and a dog, but it's okay. You can read this.
Okay,
one.
Good. Thank you for telling me this.
Yes, yeah. I feel like that's what should be printed on the cover.
Yes.
But in it, One of the people that she really befriends and means a lot to her in the book is the local librarian. Mm. And she has these candies in her desk that when you put them in your mouth, they taste like melancholy.
Oh.
And they make you think about things in your life.
Wow.
Right?
Kids
books are amazing.
Yes, well, I knew that.
People sleep on kids books.
Yeah. Stop sleeping on kids books.
But it kind of you just feel like it has a present day setting.
For sure.
So I think even though it's 20 years old, you don't really necessarily notice that.
Okay.
Yeah, and it's not about books at all, but great. I really love the librarian in that book. I want her to have like a sequel book that's
just her.
Just her.
Well, I love that we're finishing out this episode of Books About Books, recommending a book that is not about books.
But it's very on brand for us because it's middle grade.
Yeah, right, exactly. This has been such a fun episode. I love that there are so many books that we talked about here that I haven't read because it affirms that I have read some, but there are so many books. Books are inspiring and books inspire other books, which is just like wild to me.
I don't know whether to be inspired or exhausted. This recording has been a wild ride. But I do love that. I just love that there's so many books about books and I just want to keep reading them.
Yeah. Thank you for suggesting this because it would not have even crossed my mind. Because like when I read certain books just for leisure, I do think about, oh, this would make a good podcast subject or like mm-hmm. we should talk about this book or we should try to have this author on. But I hadn't even remotely thought about this as a concept. So thanks for bringing it to the table.
Oh, you're welcome.
Yeah. Hey, like this has been so fun to do in person.
So fun. And like next time, we're going to do it without all the bonkers.
Absolutely. And I promise I will help you move your desk back before I leave.
It's taking all of my restraint to not immediately be online figuring out what kind of freestanding thing I need for this.
I hear you. I'll let you go down your own rabbit hole once I leave. like Jill said, we will have an entire list of books about books recommendations on our bookshop link, which you can find at bookshop.org/shop/bookitpod. Hang out with us on Instagram at bookitpod or Twitter at bookitpod and TikTok at bookitpod, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, if you are into a middle-aged mom trying to learn how to use TikTok.
We are the place for that.
It's a very niche market.
But if you've read any books about books that you want to recommend to us, shoot us an email at info@bookitpod.com. Jill, can't wait to do this again.
I can't decide whether I can't wait or I mean, it's not like I never want to do it again, but I definitely need a drink right now.
Okay, great. Cut and we'll make that happen.
Thank you for listening to Book It, a bi-weekly podcast where we talk frankly about books.
Book It is available across podcast platforms.
Subscribe to never miss an episode, and don't forget to leave a review before you go.
We'd love to stay in touch. You can find us online at bookitpod.com or on Instagram and Twitter at bookitpod.
Want to read something you heard on today's episode? Visit us at bookshop.org/shop/bookitpod.
Book It was created by hosts Jill Burkett-Ragacy and Michael Woodson, with sound design and production by Madeline Call at Honeysuckler.